Hello, you're very welcome to episode 2 of the 99%.
You're Lucy Maudaly.
And you're Michael McAndrew. It is episode 2. We survived. Michael, isn't it great that we're here again for another week?
Yes, we're still alive, Lucy.
I really thought that there were going to be riots in the streets after our first episode. It was such a call to revolution. So original, unique, and liberating for the people of this constrained society.
I haven't gotten any threatening emails since putting that episode
out.
So
haven't.
I think it went pretty well.
It didn't, take down any dictatorships or bring the military to my front door. So I would say it went pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, it was fun. It was fun. It was great having you in the studio, Lucian. Hopefully, we'll be able to do that again in the very near future.
In case people didn't already notice, I am not in the studio this week.
Yeah,
Michael and I live hundreds of miles away from each other in different continents.
This is not true.
And it's really so difficult for me to travel to his home and to his studio. That,
it's not really that hard.
It's just not worth the effort for you listeners every week. So instead, I'm just remaining in my bunker and doing the show on a really, low quality audio recording system.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah. My quality's pretty poor this week.
I mean, it's not the worst. It's fine.
It's not the worst, but, it's worse than yours.
Yeah, well, that's to be expected.
It seems kind of appropriate, considering that on the album art, which was designed by you and is absolutely beautiful, the top of my head is quite clearly of a lower resolution image than the top of your head.
Yeah,
so
that is.
I think it's pretty consistent.
It's kind of cool, though. It kind of adds a consistent kind of a thing to both of our characters.
It does. You're the slick, professional, good podcaster, and I'm
that.
The idiot in his basement trying to, have the pretense of one.
Yes. Oh, wow.
Oh, so, we're recording pretty early this week, and in the news has been Grease. The musical from the 1970s starring John Travolta. No, The Country.
No.
I see what I did there. And why has Grease been in the news, Michael? You know everything about this. Give us a detailed breakdown.
I know absolutely nothing about this.
I don't really either. It's a complicated economic situation. But
So a socialist party took over. Well, they weren't taken. They didn't take over per se. They were voted in.
They were elected into government.
Yeah, absolutely. And they basically started threatening, because Greece is in a lot of debt. Like, they are seriously screwed. And so they decided that the socialist party decided they were going to leave the EU. And once they leave the EU, that means all of their debt had to be excused, which is extremely bad for the EU, because then they'll have billions of euro will just have to be excused. So there's this kind of, this is a really, really basic, I really haven't been following it at all. This is literally just from what I've heard. So there's this kind of battle now about, this is battle now between Greece and the EU. You have Greece threatening to leave the EU, and you have the EU like, please don't leave the EU.
I'm not sure about it much either, but there was a referendum on Sunday on whether to accept the conditions of austerity that were being presented by the Troika, which is like the EU and the ECB and European Commission, and the World Bank is involved as well, I guess. And there was a referendum on whether to accept these, and the Greek people overwhelmingly voted no, which is the position that was being encouraged by their government, and also by our government, sort of, in a way. Endikeni kind of went rogue on Monday and said it was a good thing, and even though I don't see how it would be beneficial for our economy, it wouldn't really, but... And also, all of the socialist parties here were supporting that side. So, I don't know much about it, but...
I think it's... Ireland was kind of encouraging it because clearly there is some political bullying going on there.
Yep.
for Greece to take it. And that's something that's the same thing that basically happened to, well, not in such a huge scale.
Yeah. But it would have been really, really bad for the people of Greece, for the lower classes, for people on welfare. Yeah. They would have suffered terribly if these measures had been put into place. Whereas the 1%, as we refer to them here on the 99%, wouldn't have actually suffered as much. So it would have been a pretty unfair situation. And to a certain extent, that was seen here a few years ago when we got austerity measures. So it seems to be a fairly good thing that it was a no vote. But I, as I said, can't say much about it. But I'm sure there'll be more news soon. Mm-hmm. I visited Greece in 2010.
Okay.
Beautiful country. One of the best places I've ever been to.
Yeah, I mean, I've never been there, but I definitely want to go there sometime.
Yeah, I wasn't on the main country land, but I was on the island of Lindos. And on Lindos, I was walking through the fields with my family in the middle of nowhere.
Yep.
And across the field, approaching us, we see a gentleman with a large bushy beard in long black robes. And he beckons towards us and shouts over to join him. So we approach the man, not knowing who he was. He turned out to be a Greek Orthodox priest named Father Spiloudos. He welcomed us into his estate, which was sort of a, I mean, it was his home, but he had a few other little buildings surrounding it. And he said, he introduced us to his mother. They gave us drinks, and he gave me a gift of an orange and of some rosary beads. Beautiful gift, which I have never forgotten.
It sounds like a really
don't know
nice
where those
man.
Rosary beads are, but they're somewhere. And he said, you know, I would now like to show you inside of my laboratory. And I found this slightly worrying. What is his laboratory? What does he do in there? So we go over to his laboratory. He opens a door leading us into a very, very dark, scary room. And he turns on the lights. And what is in the laboratory? Well, it's actually an artist's studio where he paints these beautiful icons of spiritual figures from the Bible and from his faith. And he was a very, very talented painter of these icons. So we got to take a look at them, and we met his mother, and we got gifts, and it was a delightful meeting with a very delightful man. And if he's listening, then thank you, Father Spiridus, because I still remember you today. And
there you go.
Well, he also lived in Florida for a short period. So there's my little anecdote for the week.
Uh-huh. That's a great story. He sounds like a really nice man.
Yep. And there's an example of when Greek story.
There you go. Okay. Lucian,
we didn't get a.
Did we get any feedback?
We got a tiny bit of feedback. I mean, we had huge listenership last week. We really just broke records.
I kind of forgot to turn on the statistics.
Okay. Well, we don't know.
We have no idea. But I just assume that the downloads were off the charts. Yeah.
We're new and noteworthy on iTunes Store right now.
Yep.
In three countries.
There you go.
I won't tell you what three they are because they're not amazing countries.
I hope one of them is Ireland.
One of them's Ireland.
Yes.
The other two, Ireland, and then we're very far down the list, I believe, on the UK.
Okay, not too bad.
And then there's a third country, which I'm not entirely sure of, but I saw it last night when I was looking down the list. We got a bit of feedback. George Farrow said, loved it, and cool accents, haha.
Yeah.
Thanks, George.
Who doesn't love our accents?
And that's all the feedback we got.
Oh, great.
Okay. Jerry Collins Jr. left us a nice review on iTunes.
Jerry Collins Jr. Yeah, that name rings a bell. Let's talk a bit about the Women's World Cup.
Yeah.
Can I say women's or women?
Well, you see,
Women World Cup.
It's really the Women World Cup. the Lady World Cup.
The ladies.
Like, in an ideal world, this would just be called the World Cup.
Yes, that's, well, this.
Or, you know.
Well, I mean, this is the debate.
It would be the Men's World Cup, the Women's World Cup. There'd be two, and they'd be called the Men's World Cup, like North Carolina and South Carolina. Northern Ireland or the
Republic. Wait, so do you think that men and women should be allowed play the same sport together? So you're allowed to have women on women and men on a team?
Doesn't really make a lot of sense.
No, it doesn't, because they're very different.
Yeah.
You know, physically, yeah. I mean, men are very, very different to women.
Absolutely.
So there's it's not really suitable to have a mix. But,
yeah.
You know,
I don't think anyone's proposing a mixed sport.
No.
What people are proposing is that the Women's World Cup be given equal treatment.
Oh,
to the
definitely.
Which I absolutely believe.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that sports, be it here in Ireland with the GAA sports, where the men's versions are just given so much more prominence in the media, I think is absolutely disgraceful and really needs to change. Mm. I mean, the Women's World Cup, I didn't see any of it, because it was getting very little television coverage.
Yeah.
And, you know, there wasn't the same hype about it. Last year, I watched loads of matches in the Men's World Cup, and I'm not a big sports fan, but I watched loads of them. Mm-hmm. And then this year, I mean, the Women's World Cup, I believe they had a few matches on BBC Three, but it was really hard to get a hold of that coverage here.
Right. I was watching it in the US. The US have pretty good coverage of it.
Yeah.
But once I came home, I couldn't get it. So
yeah. I think if Ireland had been in it, RTE might have shown it. But
yeah, the Irish,
the US,
matches,
there was
sure.
a because you the US were a team were expected to do so well, and in the end they won. Spoiler alert! That and it was their third time winning. So they obviously their media decided to give it more coverage as a result.
Right.
So it was on in Canada, and the final was on this week. Between the US and Japan, and US won 5-2. Goals were scored by Lloyd, Holiday, and Heath against Ojimi and the other Japanese player with traditional Japanese name Johnston.
Right.
So that was the final. It was on in Vancouver, and the U.S. won. So congrats to the U.S., and it was on the 5th of July. What are the odds of the U.S. winning an international sports contest, which is something that never, ever, ever happens? And it was the day after 4th of July. What?
There you go.
That was crazy coincidence.
Yeah.
So, you know, this Women's World Cup, I'd say it probably got more coverage than other Women's World Cups. I think FIFA tried to get at that because they are in such hot trouble at the moment with their corruption scandals that they want to be perceived in a positive light, and giving the equality a push is clearly a way they see of out of their pit. But I don't think it's going to be. I don't think it's really helped them.
Well, the first Women's World Cup was held in 1988, 58 years after the first Men's World Cup. So there you go. You know.
And of course, well, between the start of the Men's World Cup and the start of the Women's World Cup, then there would have been so much change in the, you know, equality in society between men and women in terms of getting the vote and in the workplace. I mean, but since then, even, there's been so much change. And there is so much change still yet to be achieved in countries like America and Ireland and around the world. Women's World Cup. What's next, Michael? What are we going to talk about now?
So last week, we didn't talk about Apple Music, and I guess I hadn't used it that much, but we had also kind of talked about it on a podcast beforehand, so we kind of had it talked to death. But maybe we should revisit it, because I've been using Apple Music for 2 weeks now, and you've been using it as well, Lucien, so I guess we could talk a bit about what our impressions of it are. So I signed up for it on the first day.
As did I.
Right.
Because that darn update installed.
Right. Now, typically, historically, first day experiences of any Apple product for me, any Apple software product, have been terrible. The day basically consists of waiting 5 hours for the thing to download and update, and then once it updates, it's so slow and it just feels buggy, and you have to wait for another patch to come out for it to actually work. And this time around, it was actually quite a pleasant experience. I mean, it took about 5 minutes for the update to download, another 5 minutes for it to install, And I went through the steps, and I personally, you know, I thought that Apple Music, the way they were going to implement it on mobile devices was they were going to put out a separate app called Apple Music, like what they have with the iTunes Store.
Yep.
A separate app to the music app on my iPad. To kind of separate things, because music is a different app to Apple Music. So they didn't. They incorporated Apple Music into the music app. So you have a section for your own music that's downloaded, that you own. And then you have all these other categories. So you have like new, which is the section that uses Apple's kind of... they're not using algorithms. They're using real people, aren't they?
I think so. Yeah, they seem to be...
That was kind of the big selling point, is that real people are choosing music for you. Hmm. And the way that they did this was, for some odd reason, they thought it would be a great idea to put all of these, you know, options for what music you like in balls that kind of hop around the screen and stuff.
Oh, these balls. So glad I'm never going to have to see them again.
So I think it was like to try and make the thing be fun or something. I don't know.
Family friendly.
They didn't even have that many choices. It was literally like 50, 60,
it was such
70s,
a weird selection. It was 80s. Like, so you had, it was like Taylor Swift, Coldplay, Garth Brooks, AC/DC. And then they had really random choices like Rick Astley and Blue and all these artists who haven't been big in, you know, 40 years. And I was like, what? I mean, I guess people enjoy that music, but Blue, yeah, their career has never really been anywhere.
Right. So that was kind of weird. But they have this new section, which, I mean, I guess the curation is fine. It does the job. It's just as good as Spotify's. I haven't noticed the difference. I mean, I don't particularly use that for finding new music. I kind of listen to new albums that come out, recommendations from other people. I typically won't use that for music discovery. But
yeah.
Then they have this new section, which is kind of just all this new...
The Long Way Home by Krept like, and Conan.
I mean, yeah.
Yogi and Skrillex.
There you go. So it kind of, to me, it seems kind of confusing, but did you experience this when it first kind of, installed that it was running really slowly?
Absolutely. To this moment, when I want to play a song, there's a like 6 or 7 second wait before the song plays.
Yeah. Like Spotify is instant for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I also experienced this from time, not consistently, but from time to time, I experience this on the podcasts app as well on the iPad.
Yeah.
So I think it's just a general glitch in Apple's cloud-based system where it's streaming things. Because if it's on the cloud, then there's always a gap, wait. But that can be irritating. And generally, this is just not a very simple app to get the hang of immediately. No. But I think I've gotten used to it now. I mean, I'm not trusting them to the extent that I'm going around clicking on everything they tell me to, but you know, I'm willing to look at some things that are new. I'm willing to explore a little bit.
So if you want to sign up for Apple Music, this is a 3-month trial, free trial period. They'll start charging you in October, and you have to sign up with your credit card details for either the single user, which is $9.99 a month, or the family plan, which you can have up to 6 people on for $14.99 a month, which is actually a fantastic deal.
Absolutely, yeah.
Much better than Spotify's family plan, which is extremely expensive.
Defamation, Michael.
Oh, sorry. Yes. I'm not supposed to say better. I'm just supposed to say cheaper.
You know, it's different.
Objectively speaking, Apple's plan provides... 6 people, whereas I think Spotify is for 2 people, isn't it? I want to get this right.
Yeah,
maybe it's three people. Let me just find out right now. All right, so Spotify, $9.99 for the single user. So it's the same pricing as Apple Music. Okay. But if you want what $14.99 will get you on Spotify is two users, $20 for three users, $25 for four, and $30 for five users. So
not
Apple
a great
Music's,
deal in comparison.
I mean, Apple Music are doing a really great deal with the six people for $15. It's a pretty good deal. They'll be coming out with an Android app later on this year, before the end of the year, I guess. So if you have anybody who's on Android, like myself, my Android phone, that will be great as well. But most of my experience of Apple Music so far has been on the desktop, because if I'm ever listening to music, it's while I'm working on my computer. So I use my computer for music, and so I mostly use iTunes for my music. I buy my music off iTunes or YouTube, being honest. iTunes is, to me, is quite a difficult application to use, and it's never really worked in the way that I want it to work. So they've done the same thing with iTunes, where they just kind of incorporated iTunes Music into the music section of iTunes, which is fine. Now, I find that it runs a little bit faster on iTunes on the computer than
on
my
iPad. Definitely, yeah.
But it's still pretty slow to load. I am not going to... I'm going to say this right now. I've already turned off the auto-renew, so when October comes...
As have I.
Yeah, it's definitely not going to charge 15 euro to my credit card. So I've already turned that off. I've decided I am not going to go with it. Now, I'm not exactly a huge... I've never used streaming services in the past. And the reason why is because artists literally get nothing from this. Apple are giving 0.2 cents to record companies for every play. That doesn't mean the artist is getting 0.2 cents for every play.
Yeah.
It's already a ludicrous amount of money.
Artists will be getting like 0.7 of a cent.
Even less.
Yeah, probably 0.2.
No, like that's... It's... You see, what Apple are giving to record companies is 0.2. So...
Oh, yeah.
What artists
are getting 0.02.
Right, like something crazy. I don't know what they're going to be getting. It's going to be so small. So I've always, if I like an artist, you know, for discovery purposes, I'll go out on YouTube and listen to their music. But if I like the artist, I'll go and I'll buy their album on iTunes. And that's what I'll probably continue to do. You know, most people just prefer the kind of convenience of streaming services and that. And it, I think streaming services is great, they're great because a lot of people would otherwise just go and pirate music.
Yep.
Right? So they're getting more people to pay. It's not as much as what they'd make if everyone just bought the albums on iTunes, but it's still better than nothing.
Yeah,
and,
it's a better alternative.
And I like it for that. But I wouldn't use it myself. How do you get music, Lucien?
How do I get
music? I already know the answer to this one. I don't want to incriminate you, but...
I am a proud user of Spotify. let's just leave it at that.
Spotify free. Spotify free, ad-supported.
I enjoy YouTube, but only on official artist channels, of course.
Of course.
And, you know, that's all. That's only ways I ever listen to new music. And, you know, on the subject of new music, it's time now for a new segment that I like to call Michael's Hot New Track.
All right.
Michael,
sure.
What is, you are an expert on cool, hip, new tunes.
No,
give
I'm
me
not.
Your hot new track
well,
for this week.
I am a musician and I do love music. I'm always listening to new music, but it's not like I won't listen to an album within the month that it comes out, typically, unless I'm a huge fan of that artist, like Alabama Shake's new album, which you should definitely listen to, or the Black Keys' new album, which actually came out last year, so it's not that new. Turn Blue, definitely recommend that. But this week I've been listening to Paolo Nutini's new album. And I don't know why you don't like Paolo Nutini.
He's such an annoying little man.
Oh, dear.
Oh, God. I've hated him for years.
So this is where myself and Lucien kind of have
conflict.
You see, I don't judge a person's music on the person. I judge the person's music on the music that they create. Whereas Lucien, you hate Paolo Nutini's music because you hate Paolo Nutini.
I've heard like two or three of his songs ever, and I have enjoyed none of them. They have irritated me greatly.
This new album, I have to say, is really, really good. The title track is Scream or Funk My Life Up.
Is that your hot new track of the week?
I'm not going to say that's the new track of the week.
You have to pick a new track, yeah, Michael. What's your hot new track?
Right, I'm going to have to pick this track. Okay, let me get it up, the album. But it starts off, I mean, it's not the best song on it, but it's definitely the most catchy. That's why I picked it as the first one. Let me get it up right now. The album is called Caustic Love. So that's my hot new album. You see, I don't like picking one song because
we have to hear a clip of Michael's hot new track.
Yeah, I'll put it in. I'll overdub it now, so you can hear a 30-second clip. All so right. that we don't.
Oh, it's so good! I love it.
I'm going to say Iron Sky. We find God and religion to paint us. Iron Sky. It's
just
six,
like the classic
6 minute.
2012.
It's a 6 minute 13 second song, so you're getting your money's worth there. Really great song. Really great song. I'm playing it right now.
Is it available on Apple Music?
It is available on Apple Music. You can also buy the album on iTunes, which I highly recommend, for only €6. So do that.
Nice.
Do that.
I'm loading it up on Apple Music right now. Iron Sky, here it is. Song by Paolo Nutini.
There you go.
I'm adding it to my playlist.
Great. It's a fantastic song.
All right.
And he's a really great artist, so listen to that.
So, next up, we got some breaking entertainment news, don't
okay.
we,
Michael? Literally breaking.
This is broken in the last 6 minutes. It kind of gives away when we're recording.
Yeah. yeah. All right, Lucien.
So I can't discuss this in great detail because it's literally just broken, but yeah. I'm just going to read the story. Lucasfilm has officially announced that directors Phil Lord and Chris Miller, and they are the directors of Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, okay. 21 Jump Street, the Lego movie 22 Jump Street, will direct a Star Wars anthology film focusing on young Han Solo.
The
screenplay is to be written by Lawrence Kasdan and his brother John Kasdan. It focuses on how young Han Solo became the smuggler, thief, and scoundrel whom Luke and Obi-Wan first encounter in the cantina. Lawrence Kasdan, the writer and director, known for writing Raiders of the Lost Ark, he co-wrote the screenplays for The Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, and Star Wars The Force Awakens. Oh, sorry, John Kasdan is his son. He wrote and directed a film this year called The First Time, which premiered at Sundance. He's also written for Freaks and Geeks and Dawson's Creek. So Chris and Phil directing this film about young Han Solo. It's been rumored for a while that this would be a film. This is very exciting. Are you excited, Michael?
No.
Okay. You're not a Star Wars fan?
I mean, you're asking the wrong person.
You're that one guy.
I'm not. I love watching the Star Wars movies, okay? Mm. But I'm not a Star Wars geek or someone who's seriously into Star Wars. I love the movies. They're great movies. Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to the new movie that's coming out, obviously. So this isn't Disney.
Oh, it is. It's part. It's
oh, it is.
It's, So what they're doing is they're doing the episode. So they're doing episode 7, The Force Awakens, and continuing that series.
Yeah, sure.
Those characters. And then every second year, they're releasing these Star Wars anthology films.
Well, that sounds great. And yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Yeah.
There's one coming out next year called Star Wars Anthology Rogue One with Felicity Jones, which is about a sort of raid on the Death Star during the rebellion. And now this one here is going to be about young Han Solo.
Okay,
but
cool.
Phil Lord, Chris Miller, really talented, funny guys. They're very smart, and I would trust them more than anyone else in Hollywood.
I think I'm the only person in the entire world who hasn't watched the Lego movie.
Yeah, you are. Considering your secret past with the Lego brand.
Yeah, I mean, it's
crazy.
Like, yeah. So I should go out and watch the Lego movie, but
you should. It's a classic.
I've seen 22 Jump Street. Love that movie. It's a great movie.
So in other geeky Hollywood news that only a minority of people care about, Comic-Con is this weekend in San Diego.
Yeah.
Were you in San Diego last week?
San Diego is like
very far away.
Very far away. It's probably 5 hours away from where I was. I was San Francisco, just south of San Francisco. San Diego is way down there.
Okay. So, well, San Diego Comic-Con's on. Biggest convention in the world for lovers of pop culture, geekdom. Yep. And in the last few years, it's been the biggest place of the year for Hollywood studios to dump their big news about superhero movies and other stuff. This year, it's going to be somewhat underwhelming because Marvel Studios and Star Wars will not be attending. They are instead going to be making their big announcements at the D23 Disney Convention, which is on in Anaheim in August. And they're kind of being a bit obnoxious about it. They're basically saying F you to the San Diego crowd and are instead going and just using their own headquarters to stage another convention.
You know, I kind of think it's the trend now, though. We've seen this with CES, the kind of the biggest technology conference of the year. Microsoft declared that they weren't going to be in attendance. E3, we're kind of seeing companies pull out and do their own announcements as well, rather than announcing them at these conferences. It's kind of the trend right now. And I don't know why they're doing it. I guess you get more... You're getting more hype for whatever you're announcing.
What it basically means is that they're going to have the news cycle all to themselves in August. They won't have to compete with other studios.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's going to be big stuff at Comic-Con for Batman v Superman and for X-Men, Apocalypse and such. So they won't have to compete with that when they're promoting, you know, whatever Marvel stuff.
But they are kind of leaving
next year is.
Leaving the kind of geek fan base out to dry there, but I guess they don't care. They're kind of more targeting the everybody.
Yeah, there's still going to be some stuff on, so yeah, it'll be interesting. Mm-hmm. Gonna go on now to there was a video that appeared online on Sunday, and it was a teaser for Netflix.
Oh, I saw it. That was amazing.
Netflix are rebooting Lemony Snicket's A Series of Unfortunate Events as a series. Now, these books, this is one of the best children's book series of the last couple of decades. Really fantastic books. Mm-hmm. They're dark and they're smart and they're full of just literary references. I love them as a child.
Brilliant.
And I think the 2003 film with Jim Carrey is a masterpiece. I am one of the few people on earth who thinks this, but it is one of my favorite films. I think it did the books justice. The first three it only covered, but it is a really fantastic film. But there is improvement to be made. There is room for improvement, and there is room for an expansion of this universe. So Netflix are making a series of this. We don't know if it's going to be a one-season, 13-episode series or 13 seasons. I imagine it's the former. I hope so, because then they will be able to attract bigger name actors.
So one episode for every book.
I mean, you could do that. The books are short. They don't have a whole lot of plot to them. So, I mean, the film is an hour and a half, and it covered three books pretty well. So I think if each episode was Netflix length, which would be between an hour and 10 minutes, you could do these books, most of them, justice. You might split the last book into...
I wouldn't mind if they did one season per book.
But that would just take... so long, and there isn't enough in the books for more than I'd say four or five episodes max.
That's true. Yeah.
So maybe you could do three books a season.
Yeah.
So this teaser comes out on Sunday morning online. Now, it's not official Netflix channels. It's on this Eleanor Poe channel.
Yeah.
But it is absolutely brilliant. It is so professionally done. It's beautifully shot, and it has this great song that it really, I think, and everyone seems to agree, captures the kind of dark, mysterious essence of the books. And
but it wasn't just, it's
beautiful. But it turns out Monday afternoon was not legitimate.
Yeah.
But Netflix are okay with it. They commented on the video, which now has 2 million views and will probably have loads more by the time this episode is released. Netflix have commented on the video, and their comment is, nope, this isn't an official Netflix teaser, but we won't call Count Olaf. This is most marvelous.
Mm.
So, I mean, Netflix need to give the guy who made this a job doing the opening credits for the show.
I seriously hope the actual series looks as cinematic.
Oh, yeah.
Cinematically amazing.
People have loved it so much that there's no way. I mean, they're not going to ignore it. They're obviously going to either... they'll either try to copy it or, hopefully, they'll hire the guy. So we found out who this guy was. His name is... get you his name now. His name is Kellen Moore. I'm delighted to say that Kellen... Yeah, Kellen's not here. I emailed Kellen.
We got an interview with Kellen, yes.
I emailed Kellen asking for an interview. Kellen has not responded yet, so apologies for that, listeners. But Kellen
to go on the greatest podcast on Earth, of course.
Exactly. We're the greatest podcast on Earth, and Kellen just couldn't be bothered. But, you know, I'm sure he just didn't check his email. It just passed him by. There's no way he ignored it. So Kellen Moore, anyway, he's a really talented guy, and I hope he gets work on this show. And I am
definitely
very excited
for this
show.
Definitely come on, Kellen. You're welcome on this
definitely
show.
Come on. You're welcome anytime.
Yeah.
And the author of the books as well, Daniel Handler, who poses as Lemony Snicket, he tweeted saying that he loves it. So that's great.
Uh-huh. So I'm here with Ray Ortega, the podcast helper. He has two podcasts, the Podcaster Studio and Podcasters Roundtable, and I'm joined by Lucian also.
Hello.
So, Ray, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much.
So, Ray, I just mentioned you're a professional podcaster.
Right.
You have two podcasts of your own that you do as a hobby, the Podcaster Studio and the Podcast Roundtable, but you're also, your day job is as a professional podcaster. So, how did you get that? That's really interesting.
Yeah, it's sort of a dream job. In fact, it's so funny because I just got a plaque today from my work that commemorates 5 years. So I've actually been doing it for about 7 now. So,
wow.
You know, back when podcasting started, in those early days, I got involved as a hobby. It's something that I found on iTunes.
Right,
thought was amazing, just like every other podcast listener or podcaster, and I decided to produce my own. And through that process, I joined a meetup group that had other podcasters in it. And eventually, you know, you spend so much time doing this that I had a lot of tips and tricks to share. So I was speaking at that local meetup group, and, you know, it's sort of not only a meetup group, but there's some level of networking there. Mm-hmm. And some of us went to the only PodCamp that they had in Washington, D.C., and PodCamp is sort of an unconference here in the States, and it's just like another conference, but it's really anyone can speak. And I spoke there, and then there was just a few of us hanging out afterwards, and my now boss was at the time talking to someone else, mentioning this job he had producing podcasts for a large nonprofit that was based in DC, and that it was going so well that he was going to need some help, and he was actually trying to pitch the job to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to myself, I said, hey, that's my job. Like, I just, sometimes you just know it. And I said, I'm getting that job. And through that process, I went and got the interview and ended up getting a job part-time on contract.
Wow.
And then after about 6 months, they hired me full-time, and that was almost 7 years ago. So I produce podcasts professionally. We do a lot of live streaming. We have a whole network of shows. It's a science organization, so they're all science-based shows. And yeah, that's what I do for the day job. And then I, you know, turn to the next computer after that's over and I produce all my stuff as a hobby. So there's a lot of confusion there. A lot of people think that I make my living from my shows about podcasting, because a lot of us, or a lot of people in that niche, they do that. Now, I do some consulting, but I definitely don't. I don't pitch it because I want people to know that, you know, I'm putting all the information out there for free. And it is still my hobby, and I hope it can stay that way because I love my day job and I love my nighttime hobby, as I say it on my show.
Right. So what was it about podcasting that kind of that you really liked when you were starting off? I mean, you could have started on YouTube, you could have started on so many different platforms. What was it about iTunes, that podcasting, that as a platform
that... Yeah, you know, I don't even think YouTube existed yet. I think
podcasting
might have beat YouTube, but...
So when did you start?
I found podcasts, I guess you could say, not like I discovered it, but I found it in iTunes Store in 2005 and podcasts started in 2004.
Okay, right. So you're one of the really early adopters.
I didn't start then though. I started listening then. And then around the middle of 2006, I decided, and this is how it goes for a lot of podcasters, they listen and they decide, hey, I can do that. And for me, you mentioned YouTube, and I get your point. I could have started online video, whatever. The platform didn't matter.
Yeah.
But I started as, you know, my hobby was always, for a long time, had been editing video. And so when I realized that two random dudes living somewhere that I didn't even know suddenly could put their own show onto iTunes, I said, I have to figure out how that's done. And so that's why I started my first show. First of all, I'm just kind of a geek and grew up with computers. And I loved production, or it was a little hobby of mine. So I said, well, let's take what I'm already producing and let's try to put it on iTunes. And so I taught myself how to podcast, and that's really how it all started.
Right. So your first podcast was actually a video podcast, wasn't it?
Yeah, correct.
The Produce Picker, right?
Right. Produce Picker podcast.
Right.
Yes,
that's really interesting.
Available.
Oh, is it really? Okay.
Well, you can still watch it. It's embarrassing, but it exists.
Yeah, no, because it's really... I mean, I always obviously associate podcasts with audio podcasts.
Most people do. Yeah. These days, especially. I feel like video was more popular, which is ironic that it's more popular a while back. But audio has really emerged as the dominant platform because it's just easier to consume, in your car. Or you can take it with you anywhere. Whereas video, you kind of have to be sitting there watching it. And that's why YouTube sort of won when it comes to video. But yeah, all podcasting is, it's video, it's audio, it's even PDF and EPUB, believe it or not.
So you have two current audio shows, as I mentioned, the Podcaster's Studio and the Podcaster's Roundtable. I guess first I kind of want to talk about the Podcaster's Studio and how that came to be as a podcast. Because you started off with the Produce Picker, which was, you know, a video podcast. And how did you transition into then an audio podcast and a podcast about podcasting?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was a fan of podcasts about podcasting, and Dave Jackson, who does the School of Podcasting, I was listening to him, and I had started my video show to teach myself how to podcast. It's called Produce Picker Podcast. At the time through high school and college, worked in produce departments. So when I thought about, hey, I'm going to start a podcast, what the heck do I podcast about? I decided, well, I have all these tips and tricks, so I'll start that show to teach myself. It wasn't because it was my passion, but my passion was production, so it was to teach myself. So after a couple years of doing that, I then really had a lot of my own knowledge. Back then, there wasn't a whole lot. You know, Dave had a show about, it was mostly about audio production, an audio podcast, but there wasn't a whole lot of tips out there for starting a podcast. So eventually that became my passion, podcasting. That's just what happened. And then I decided, well, I would like to learn the audio only side of it, you know, get into different microphones and mixers and that whole thing. So I'll start another show that's audio only. And again, you come back to that decision. Well, what do I podcast about? Well, this time it was easy because all I did in my spare time was podcasting. So I had all kinds of stuff that I could talk about for hours on the microphone. So I started a show about podcasting, and because that was my passion. So like the video show before was my sort of way of teaching myself how to podcast, the audio show was now my way to teach myself how to do audio podcasting.
Right. That's very interesting.
But also share what I love so much.
Yeah, it's very interesting. A lot of people, they start a podcast to learn about something. So they'll start a podcast about how to use computers. And then they'll go and they'll have to actually learn how to use computers. It's actually a very interesting kind of learning method. And I guess, with Pat Flynn, for example, he started off, he wanted to learn about something. So he created a blog about taking taking an exam, and it's the kind of same kind of thing. So your second show is the Podcasters Roundtable. That is, I am a huge fan of the Podcasters Roundtable, by the way. Right?
Awesome. It's, we got to get you on the roundtable then.
That would be so cool. Yeah, yeah. Definitely. So that's a show hosted on Google Hangouts. Hangouts on air. That is mm-hmm. so. I think I remember just as Google Hangouts on air became a thing,
that show
was born on Google Hangouts.
Completely, yeah. I mean, I'd heard that they were going to release this new tech, which was Google mm-hmm. Hangouts on air, which is basically Google's version of live streaming, but a little different, right? Really easy. It's like Skype, except it's really easy to gather 10 people. And I thought, well, I have a show for that. I'm already hanging out. Like I might get on Skype with you or Dave Jackson or, you know, some other podcaster. And it might be just to answer one question that takes 2 minutes. And an hour later, we're still there talking about podcasting because we're geeking out over it. So I said, well, that would be, you know, it'd be so cool to have that recorded. So, you know, when Google Hangouts was launching and they released it to celebrities first and then they opened up to the public. I said, as soon as they open up to the public, that's the show I'm going to do. Just me and other podcasters just talking about podcasting, like we're sitting around the campfire. And so that was the genesis of that show. And it's still on Google Hangouts on air. It's nice because you get you into live streaming. It's video. Those parts aren't podcasts, but then it's delivered as an audio only podcast, which then goes out to, you know, all the typical places, iTunes and beyond.
Right. And what I love about the Podcasters Roundtable is that you've created this kind of community of podcasters now who have discussions. They get the chance to geek out and ask other people in the community about their podcasting questions as well. I just love that whole kind of sense of community that you have created with the Podcasters Roundtable. It's just such a great idea. So I guess I want to ask you now a bit about, because you've been podcasting for so long, you know, you've been listening since the beginning, and then in 2007, you decided that you were going to go and create your own podcast. What do you think the future of podcasting is?
I think it's going to pull alongside all the other big media forms, right? You've got TV, radio, now you've got YouTube, Netflix, right? Whatever people are consuming, whatever they're spending their free time on when they have a chance to listen or watch something, podcast is just becoming part of that. And we can see that, you know, it's growing every year. More people know what it is, more people consume, and it's going to pull up right alongside as another major media format. And that's great. You know, I don't think we don't have to be number one. I mean, you know, radio is bigger than TV or vice versa. It doesn't really matter. Podcasting is very specific in that it tends to serve niche audiences very well. And it could, you know, in some cases it serves a wide audience, but it has a very specific thing that it's very good at. And, you know, that again is that it's portable, it's time shifted where you can listen to any time you want. And that's really the world we live in now. I mean, I don't know how many people watch TV in real time anymore unless it's sports. So it's just going to become part of your life. And, you know, we call it podcasting. And podcasting is really, or a podcast is really just a technical term for how you get the information out, which is, you know, via RSS feed. But I use the term show interchangeably because that's what we're really doing. It doesn't matter where it lives. It doesn't matter if, you know, you listen on my website. You know, it doesn't have to technically get it from somewhere that is traditionally delivered, you know, in a podcatcher is what they call it, or via RSS feed. So we're just producing shows. And just like all other content media, you know, we're becoming you know, major players in that market.
Yeah, I mean, even Mark Maron recently got the president of the US on his podcast, yeah. Which really, I think, in recent times has really just put podcasting on the map.
Yeah, I mean, we have a bunch of bellwether moments like that, and that was just another marker in our history of, hey, remember when, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It was really cool. Sorry, Lucien, did you want to say, come in the conversation? Yeah, yeah.
Well, what I've seen in, you know, the last few years has been the mainstream media has really started to embrace podcasting as sort of part of what they create, and that talk radio is sort of experiencing a rebirth online in podcasting, the same way that TV has done with Netflix or iTunes, or music did with iTunes, you know, 10 years ago. So what is your experience of that transition been like, Ray?
Yeah, I agree. And it's funny because the spotlight sort of has been shined on podcasting every couple years.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
In 2005, it was Word of the Year. Mm-hmm. When apps came out, it was another big surge of, you know, hey, podcasts are finally here. And so we're seeing it again. This last year has been amazing. Lots of big, you know, Serial, the president being on WTF, you name it. There's all these, again, there's sort of these markers in our history. And, you know, I think you pointed out about TV and Netflix and the media companies or the stations, whatever you want to call it, that have made that adjustment, bringing like original programming to those platforms or even just bringing whatever program they already have to those platforms, they're doing really well and they won't burn out. But radio is also seeing this shift. And as they discover what they can do with podcasting, then I think it's sort of an evolution of their own medium and they're doing really well. We've seen NPR in the space doing great. You mentioned Serial, but NPR's actually always been in the podcasting space. Until recently, they just sort of had their, you know, that massive breakout hit of Serial, but they've always been here and they understood really early on what podcasting could be for, you know, their typically traditional radio delivery of their content.
Right. But I mean, podcasting is very, very much centered around iTunes at the moment. Do you see that as a problem? Because I kind of see podcasting at the moment being based around a very much kind of a 2004, 2005 kind of technology, a kind of early internet technology. So the internet is kind of progressing at a very, very fast rate. And then we have podcasting, which the technology that it's based around is quite primitive. Do you see kind of problems coming up with that as podcasting becomes more and more popular?
I don't necessarily see too many issues. I mean, you know, Apple sort of has a stranglehold on everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whether it's computers, phones, even though, yes, we have Android, they're finally catching up.
Mm-hmm.
Music. Of a podcast. So, no, I don't, you know, I guess in podcasting, we've always been sort of fighting the, you know, how do you consume a podcast sort of issue, right? And making it easier. And we hear, hey, you know, sort of that next marker that everyone's pointing to say, hey, podcasts have finally arrived is, you know, when podcasts get inside the car, meaning it's just in your dashboard and you can turn it on the way you do your radio. And yeah, that'll be another big a moment for us and it'll push our medium, you know, forward once again. But, you know, we have never had any real large changes that have just brought a flood of people. Even Serial didn't do that, but it did bring more recognition. And, you know, I don't feel that it's a barrier. Again, there's the, you know, the difference between, you know, you say podcast and show. And, you know, as apps have come along, you know, you can have an app for your show. People get that. If you have an app, you say, hey, just go download the app. You don't even have to say podcast. People just go to websites. A lot of people consume podcasts and they probably don't know that they're actually consuming a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
If they're there on your site and they're pressing play or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, obviously we never want anyone to sort of be in control of everything, but podcasting feels, you know, diversified enough, that, you know, you can go get it on any other platform. And yes, iTunes is the 800 pound gorilla, but you know, until podcasts were put on the platform, Apple and iTunes, it really was, you know, I think that was such a big moment for them to support it. And it really, you know, back when I was finding it, that's that was the biggest thing that, that could have happened. So, and they're showing more increased, they're increasing their sort of support of podcasting. They kind of put it on the platform and kind of just let it sit there. But more recently, we're seeing more pushes to support podcasting, like the podcast app that's separate. So they do a lot of good things for us, you know, and in fact, we could use the same sort of support out of Google, which we're not getting. They have no native support for podcasting. So, you know, I think that that's a bigger problem than, than, you know, iTunes being so much associated with podcasts.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at other emerging online platforms, such as YouTube, podcasters actually have a lot of control over their content. Because YouTube, you're hosting your content on YouTube. YouTube do everything with your content. They control it. So if YouTube's terms of service change, well, then all your content has to change to apply with those terms of service. Whereas with podcasting, and that's the great thing about podcasting, I think, is how much freedom we have and how much control we have to be able to do whatever we want with our shows, whenever we want. And that's so powerful. I mean, there's no, I don't think there's any other platform apart from blogging that has that kind of power. You know, on radio, you're regulated. On YouTube, you're regulated. On any other platform, I think you're regulated. But podcasting, I think that's a great thing.
Yeah, and hopefully it remains open. I mean, it really is the true sort of democratized medium where anyone... Anyone can play, and you can say anything you want. And, you know, those things change. Hopefully they won't for podcasting. But, yeah, I mean, a good point about that is, you know, I do a YouTube channel as well. And if I'm not, you know, if YouTube kicks me out, I'm pretty much going to lose that audience. You know, it's YouTube or nothing, because that's where all the views come from. Most of the views come from search in YouTube or suggestions that YouTube makes, you know, at the end of your video or on the sidebar or something. But with podcasts, you have an RSS feed. That's your connection. Now, if iTunes, you know, sort of kicked you out of iTunes, you are still connected with that RSS feed. But, you know, there are ways to, you know, that's also why I recommend that as a podcast producer, that you get people to join your email list, which feels old. But again, if iTunes cuts you off or Stitcher or anyone says, you know, sort of blocks your connection to your audience, if you have them on an email list you control, then you can always get to them and you can say, hey, we've moved, subscribe over here. And, you know, no one really has control over, over your content.
Yeah, absolutely. So Lucien, did you want to ask any questions?
Nothing really, don't really have much to add.
Okay. So I guess seeing as you are the podcast helper at the podcast help at podcast helper on Twitter, isn't it?
Yes. At podcast helper. Yes.
I think we definitely need to ask you.
Perfect.
Mr. Podcast helper. Have you got any tips for us as a new podcast starting out?
Well, I mean, you said new podcast, but I took a look at your site. I saw your video. I saw the gear. I can hear the audio. You guys seem well ahead of other shows. So gear-wise, production-wise, it seems like you have all that dialed in. So at that point, you know, you want to be on the major platform. So if you're submitted to iTunes, of course, we mentioned that's the number one place. But, you know, you want to have things available on your website for people to be able to subscribe. Again, you want to be able to reach people wherever they're coming from. You don't want to force them to go to iTunes because we know not everyone uses iTunes. And, you know, have those, have your RSS, you know, your RSS link on your site alongside with your iTunes link, Stitcher, Android, a couple new services by Blueberry just recently launched, which is subscribe on android.com and subscribe by email.com. So go get into those and have your stuff available that way. So that's really good advice. So you've got the tech, you've got the gear down, and the production sounds good. You're submitted to various directories so that people can find you everywhere. And you can go to podcast411.com. Once you've submitted to sort of the big four or five options, there are infinite little options. So people always want to grow their show. So when you have time, extra time, you can go and submit to these other podcast directories. And you, again, you can find that at podcast411.com. There's also, I think, My Podcast Places. So a couple different places to check that out. That's Daniel's from the Audacity to Podcast. Check that out.
Okay.
And once you've done that, it's about production. It's about actually producing the content. There's tips and tricks about how to get started and stuff. But, you know, that's what's going to make your show a show, is to have actual content. So the better and the more energy you can focus into that, you know, try to be regular. I'm one to give advice about being regular. My shows are not exactly always, you're not going to get the Podcaster Studio every week. The Podcaster's Roundtable, pretty much every 2 weeks, but it's a do as I say, not as I do type thing. If you want to grow, you know, the fastest possible, I don't know if that's the best way to say that, but at a steady pace, you know, deliver content weekly. And that content obviously has to be good, or no one's going to tell their friends about it.
Ray, it was great to talk to you. Thank you so much for taking some of your time from your very busy professional podcasting lifestyle to talk to us. Ray, where can people find you online?
Well, thanks so much for having me on. You guys rock, and I'm looking forward to see what you put out, because
seriously,
your production and your brother doing the video there, he's killing it. So yeah, Kevin's great. You have all my geek things met, right? Audio and video production. I dig it. But you can go to thepodcasterstudio.com and, of course, podcastersroundtable.com. And then definitely follow me on Twitter, if Twitter is your thing, at podcasthelper, and get in touch. That's the main thing. I mean, I think you mentioned you've been listening for quite a while, but this may be the first time we've talked. So, you know, get in touch and just say hi, because I'm down with that.
Cool. Ray, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, you guys.
All right, so now we're on to Statistics of the Week.
Of the Week, what's that, Michael?
It's where we talk about obscure, interesting, funny, strange statistics. And you know how much I love statistics, Lucy.
I know how much you love statistics, Michael. I mean, after all,
I love the way you just repeat everything I say. Sounds so funny.
We show after a statistic.
This is very true. This very show is named after a statistic. So, Lucian, give us some interesting, weird, funny statistics.
All right, we'll go back and forth with these. I'll start.
Sure.
This is a fact. The average person spends 5 years of their life in time queuing.
That's crazy. Twins occur once in approximately 87 births.
That is crazy.
Yeah, that's actually quite. I thought it would be rarer than that.
Yeah, you would. I mean, think about all the people that we encounter in our lives and how many of them are twins. Mm. And it's definitely less than that, but clearly there are some places where the gene is greater. There is a gene for twins, there must be. It is estimated that most people forget 99%. Where have I heard that number before? 99% of phone numbers given to them, but not that aren't written down or otherwise recorded.
There you go.
That makes sense.
100 people a year choke to death on ballpoint pens.
How does that happen? How do you choke on a ballpoint pen?
We have to get somebody on to explain this.
We have to get a guest next week to talk about this. I guess you could be chewing one, and then you accidentally put it in your mouth and swallow it and choke and die. I don't know that. Anyway. Britain's Royal Mail lost 14.4 million letters between 2002 and 2003.
Damn.
A lot of letters to lose. Think of all of those beautiful poems that were included.
Every second, two new members join LinkedIn. That's a good one.
Good one, Michael. Good joke.
That's obviously not true.
I'd say that's a statistic from many, many years
LinkedIn
ago.
LinkedIn obviously wrote this themselves.
Yeah, I'd say LinkedIn has a new member every, I don't know, 19 minutes.
Why 19 minutes?
I don't know. It seems like a kind of
I'm on LinkedIn.
I'm on LinkedIn.
It is.
But we're professionals, Michael.
Oh, yes.
Think of all the people who aren't on LinkedIn. Is that really two new members a second material? I don't think so.
Yeah. Go ahead.
On average, there are 178 sesame seeds on each McDonald's Big Mac bun.
What? I actually
saw you eat one of these disgusting burgers.
178, exactly.
I've never eaten a Big Mac because I am a vegetarian. So I wouldn't know. But that's a lot of sesame seeds to be putting in your mouth. Absolutely.
There are 1 million ants for every person in the world.
So I have a little something tying in with this. So Ant-Man is out on Friday
nice
week.
Nice one.
And imagine if the audience, so the movie's being marketed towards ants. I mean, the posters are ant-sized, the trailer was released ant-sized.
Yeah.
The tickets for the premiere were these tiny little ant tickets. They were so adorable. I saw a joke. It was, what is this, a ticket for ants? The reference to Zoolander. And so, I mean, Marvel are marketing this movie at ants. So if ants go to see the movie in the same numbers that people would go to see a movie, then 1 million ants per person. That means that there will be hundreds of billions of ticket sales for Ant-Man, and it will become probably the highest grossing movie of all time by a very long way. That might not be entirely true. We'll find out next weekend.
Well, I mean, they say that humans are seriously overpopulated. Just look at the ants. They're taking over the world.
Oh, you need to kill these damn ants.
Yeah.
Oh. The odds of being killed by a dog, in other news of being killed, are 1 in 700,000. That's not that... Those aren't long odds.
Oh, they are. They're
Of all the 700,000 people who die, how many people die every day around the world? Probably, I don't know. 100,000, maybe? That means in a week, one person has death by dog. I actually have no idea how many people die around the world. I really have no idea. I know that 100 people die in Ireland a day, I think, so... I don't know. Anyway.
Well, let the Google answer that one. 150,000 people. You were pretty close. 150,000 people die
every day. So that means in a week. So in about... So that means every 6 days... Every 5 or 6 days, a person is killed, has death by dog.
2/3 of the people who die every day die from age-related causes. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Should we leave the statistics of the week segment for this week?
We'll do one more.
We'll
do one more. The last one.
Okay. The very last one. If you... played all of the Beatles singles and albums that came out between 1962 and 1970 back to back, it would only last for 10 hours and 33 minutes.
That's not a lot of music. Only the Beatles had done more. I've decided this week.
I mean, the Beatles never really did that much.
My favorite Beatles song, I've officially decided, is Got to Get You Into My Life. A strange choice, I'll admit. It is really upbeat and jazzy and cool and fun.
Right,
and,
I'm gonna write it down right now.
It's I think it's early stuff. I'm not sure, but I heard it for the umpteenth time. But I heard it most recently in it's in the end credits of the Minions movie, and it was the best part of the Minions
movie.
Happy
from Pharrell Williams in it.
Oh, no. Happy's in Despicable Me 2.
Oh, right.
The new Minions movie does not involve Pharrell Williams. It's set in the 1960s, and the entire soundtrack is music from that period. So it has The Doors and loads of the Beatles.
Wow, The Doors.
And the soundtrack is the best thing about it. But, you know, it's not terrible.
The Doors
but
are
I heard
one of my all-time favorite bands.
Can't argue with that.
Incredible. Speaking of Pharrell Williams, did you hear his new single? Sorry to go on.
I didn't.
Tangent.
It's called Freedom. Apple Music have been shoving it in my face so much that I've just ignored it.
I've listened to it. I have to admit, I did listen to it more than once. It's the same thing over and over again. It's just like Happy. It's the exact same thing over and over again.
Oh, Pharrell's music
is
like
so
addicting candy
floss. Oh my God. And he is a good singer. At least...
Yeah.
At least whatever they do in the studio, they make his voice sound good.
I think the best track he's ever been involved in was Get Lucky, which I think is a terrific song.
By
Daft Punk,
yeah.
Pharrell and Nile Rodgers. Best thing about that is Nile Rodgers' guitar. I saw Nile Rodgers in concert once with Chic, brilliant guitarist.
Oh, yeah, he's
Nile Rodgers.
Yeah, he's great guitarist.
One of the best pop guitarists.
Yeah.
Great guy.
Yeah.
So, we have one freedom rule this week. My freedom rules didn't go down so well in episode
rules.
One. But we only have one freedom rule. All right, here's the freedom rules music.
Well, we
freedom rules. Michael, you have the freedom to attend San Diego Comic-Con in a t-shirt with fuck Star Wars written on it. As you would, because you're a hater, you scumbag.
I am not. I love Star Wars.
But, no functioning... No, I'm like, oh, God. I've lost it. I can't do Yoda.
Yoda?
Yo. You're in Padawan. Yeah. No function.
Kill it. It's not working,
no.
Matt.
Okay, the joke is picture a good Yoda impersonation and no functioning arms or legs will you have.
No functioning arms.
Forget it. As the end of Freedom Rules. Abort.
Freedom Rules exists purely for Lucien to curse on this show.
Yeah.
All right,
have explicit.
Let's talk a bit about robots.
Okay, Michael, robots are horrible. I hate them.
Robots are incredible.
Okay, so they murder people. They star in really shitty movies. And they make me type things in my text messages which are misinterpreted as bad.
Okay, this is true. But the thing about robots is, robots aren't terrible. The only reason that robots are terrible is because they are created by equally terrible humans. Humans,
like Tony Stark,
humans are why robots are so bad. Lucien, did I ever tell you that Tony Stark isn't actually real?
Shut up, Michael. don't kill my fantasy.
But this is very true.
Tony Stark is played by an actor who is paid $80 million for two films. So,
and kind of spoiler alert, the entire latest Avengers movie is based around the fact that he's a complete clown.
Yeah, and he builds a really nasty robot who just wants to murder everyone. Yeah. And it's pretty accurate, because that's exactly the kind of person Tony Stark is beneath the surface.
But you did bring up autocorrect, and I've had some seriously bad encounters with autocorrect.
Yeah.
Some seriously
bad. But are they as bad as the 35 worst autocorrect fails of all time?
I don't know. Tell me, Lucien.
Well, here are some. Odd request, but can I use your little fan? I think I'm getting dick and our room is so hot. Sick! I'm laughing. Thank you, and OMG, that one, what the phone? I'm fighting with Mike. Again? OMG, I'm so sorry. Yeah, it's bad and I think it's it this time. He just drove off with his mom's corpse. With her corpse? Holy no, her Camaro! Ha ha ha! Who's Asian? I'm bored. Awake! OMFG! Rich man. I'm selling my iPod. This.
God. Okay. Yeah, I mean,
these
autocorrect.
Not funny, and that's five F words for the show, so I'm done.
We gotta put the explicit on this one. I'm going to save my autocorrect fail for another day.
Okay. In other robot fail news, briefly, Terminator Genisys bombed this weekend.
Okay. So why do you pronounce it Genisys? It's
because
Genesis.
Genesis is spelled G-E-N-E-S-I-S. There are some things I'm taught as a child that I refuse to let go of. That is how you spell the word Genesis.
It's true. But
this is Genisys. And it's not Genesis. And if you watch the movie, the use of the word Genisys is so unbelievably stupid that you will want to mispronounce it just out of resentment for the shitty, shitty movie.
I have not seen it, so I can't comment.
Genisys is like Stitcher. It's an app that controls everything and watches everybody. Such a bad film.
By the way, we're now on Stitcher, so you can listen to the show.
Listen on Stitcher, just go to our Facebook page or mm-hmm. Twitter page or our website, get links too.
So if you want to listen to this this show in your car,
listen to the show on the go.
Yeah, absolutely, with Stitcher.
We're on Stitcher, iTunes, and your favorite podcasting app.
That was such a brilliant plug right there. That was professional.
Really was.
That was professional.
So, it's Robot Fails. We'll come back to that some other time. Mm. I think we'll do now Nicolas Cage film of the week, featuring Bill Murray as the president.
Nicolas Cage film of the week.
That's amazing.
So, everybody, welcome to Nicolas Cage film of the week. I can see Michael clicking on the link to our Nicolas Cage film of the week. This is Nicolas Cage film of the week featuring Bill Murray as the president. I don't actually know if Bill Murray has ever appeared in a film in which he's credited as Bill Murray as the president, but I don't doubt it. He must have played the president at some time. I really want to make a movie where he plays the president. I've written a script and everything. It's great. So this is Nicolas Cage film of the week featuring Bill Murray as the president. Every week I'm going to give you a Nicolas Cage film that I want you to go out and watch and give me your reviews of before next week's episode. So I could have started obvious. I could have started either with Nicolas Cage classic, Leaving Las Vegas, for which he won an Oscar,
mm-hmm.
Raising Arizona, which is a bona fide Hollywood, just a cinema masterpiece, brilliant film. Or I could have chosen my personal favorite, which is National Treasure.
Oh.
But instead, I went with a wild card choice, a film that I hate, as does everyone else, G-Force.
I saw this movie in the cinema.
I also saw this movie in the cinema.
A specially trained squad of guinea pigs is dispatched to stop a diabolical billionaire from taking over the world.
So I saw this in the cinema.
IMDb.
And
right
then now. I went and bought it on Blu-ray.
It's incredible.
I own it on Blu-ray. I've only
5.1 stars.
I don't really like it that much. It's not a very good film, but you know. It's directed by Hoyt Yeatman, the great auteur, Oscar winner Hoyt Yeatman.
Yes.
He was credited on the film as Hoyt H. Yeatman Jr., so that is a big difference there. He is known for such classics. He's directed G-Force, and that's it. He was a writer on G-Force, and that's it. But he was visual effects on The Rock and Armageddon and Close Encounters of the Third Kind. So he's actually not that bad.
Yeah.
But G-Force got an all-star voice cast, including, Zach Galifianakis
Penelope
and
Cruz.
Will Arnett, other famous actors. And
it's great.
Yeah, it's okay. It's not as good as Bolt.
Your task for the week, should you choose to accept it, is watch this movie.
G-Force, yes. So go try and find it on iTunes or maybe it's on Netflix US. I have it on Blu-ray. If you want, I will give you my copy. Just give me your contact information and I will post it to you, signed. That's a guarantee. If you give me your home address and you pay postage and packaging, I will send you a signed copy of G-Force, signed by me and by Michael.
Wow.
On Blu-ray.
That is incredible.
It's a great deal. So, I mean, also, I would like the listeners to try and predict what next week's Nicolas Cage film of the week featuring Bill Murray as the president will be.
Mm.
Will I go for Raising Arizona? Will it be National Treasure? Will it be National Treasure Book of Secrets? Nobody knows.
Let us know on Twitter.
Maybe it'll be the witch hunter film.
Maybe.
So, an update on our low-stakes cereal. Michael, give us an update on our low-stakes cereal.
I have nothing to update.
You don't have an update?
I don't have an update.
Well, last week we launched our campaign.
Doors.
We want
Hashtag.
Schools, we want public schools here in Galway,
yep.
Ireland, to stop locking the doors of their bathrooms.
Yep.
We launched a hashtag for this campaign,
Absolutely.
Hashtag no locky the doors. We want you to tweet this no matter where you are in the world to persuade these schools to change their policy. But there's an extension to the mystery, because now not only are bathrooms in public schools being locked, but bathrooms in public are being locked. The public bathrooms in Salt Hill Holiday Village
spreading
have been
like
locked.
The plague.
There is Gardaí tape surrounding them saying, warning, do not enter. Has there been, I feel like there must have been some sort of overdose or maybe just a horrific toiletry accident.
Well,
but
I would hate to complain about this and then, you know, something
tragedy has occurred.
A tragedy had occurred in those
so
bathrooms.
We're just
so we
say,
hope,
you know,
we
hope
that
this is
whatever
there,
did
we hope
happen,
a good reason.
Whatever did happen in those public bathrooms in Salt Hill, we hope that
everyone is safe.
Our thoughts are with the families of the people.
Our thoughts and prayers are with the families.
The people whose Yeah, whose people... I don't know what I'm trying to say here. I'm getting all emotional. No,
their toilets with the doors locked, Michael. It's not that big a deal.
Okay, but we...
It's called a low-stakes cereal for a reason.
Yeah. But in all seriousness, the whole toilet thing in schools is kind of getting a bit out of hand. So
yeah, so hashtag, even though it's summer, we still want you to get this changed before September. So
no, we don't.
Hashtag no locking the doors. Yeah, because then we'll have no content for our podcast.
Yes.
So just keep it going a little bit longer. Hashtag no locking the doors. So, I think we can wrap it up.
I think we can wrap it up. That was a great episode, Lucien. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you, Michael, for joining me and letting me join you. I mean, you're twisting the knobs. You're doing the stuff in your studio.
Mm-hmm. Lucien is
a co-production of Carb Digital.
Sorry,
and BuzzHub Entertainment. Carb Digital. Providing great, great websites for your person or your business. Just visit carbdigital.com. You can get all the cool stuff, really good, really fair prices, great design, great hosting. Oh, such a good website. I love it.
BuzzHub Entertainment.
You have anything to say about BuzzHub, Michael?
I was just going to say that I go to BuzzHub all the time for all my latest movie, TV show, anything to do with movies and TV, all that news. That's the website I go to. BuzzHub Entertainment. Go to buzzhub.info right now. Check out that site. It's amazing. Run by founder and head of BuzzHub, Lucien Moir Daly.
Absolutely. And we also have great writers, Jerry Collins. Nothing.
That's where I heard Jerry Collins from.
Oh, yeah, he's one of my...
Yeah, he's one of the writers for BuzzHub. Yeah, Jerry, good man. Thank you for leaving such
iTunes
a great review
iTunes
on iTunes.
iTunes are going to block the podcast now because we're leaving spammy reviews.
No.
I set up a 99p show, boards.ie account, to try and get Irish people involved in the discussion.
I did not.
And after 6 minutes, the account was deleted for spam.
Oh, that's bad. Yeah. I'm an acquaintance of the founder of boards.ie, so
I've heard you talk about him. You can visit 99pshow.com. That's our website for the latest episodes and all the news about the show and to see our beautiful, beautiful, beautiful faces. Sort of. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes. Be sure to subscribe on Stitcher or your favorite podcast app for iOS, Android, Windows Phone, or your computer, or other tablet.
My favorite is Pocket Casts on Android.
So we on Pocket Casts?
Oh yeah, definitely. Nice. It's the greatest podcast app for Android. That's my recommendation.
We are all over social media. They can't get rid of us.
Yep.
They tried to with fumes, but they just couldn't.
No, you can't take down the 99%. We're everywhere.
Yeah, Nicolas Cage was sent after us, but he failed. We have a Facebook URL now because Phil Brindolo came to the rescue.
Yay.
That's an inside joke, but anyway, it's true. It is legitimately true. Phil Brindolo came to the rescue and got us a URL, so we are now facebook.com/99pshow, twitter.com/99pshow, Instagram.com/99pshow, and... thank you to last week's guest Graham Smith and Republic who gave us a shout out on Twitter.
Thanks very much, guys. Kind of really appreciate it.
And yeah, so Michael, that's the end of this episode.
All right, we're back next week for some more 99% talk.
Adios, amigos.
Bye.
Pod complete. Pod complete.